Hi, I'm the bit before the theme music. Now, I don't want you to get your hopes up, okay? Because if you've not listened to the show before, it's not that good. It's really not that good. If you have listened to the show before, what are you doing back here? Really? You want more of that? I know the guy that does this show, and he's an imbecile. Okay, well, look, if you want to listen to it, I'm not going to stop you. You just carry on. Fine, do your thing. Run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, it's just me and my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast. Cast with your host Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. It's October now. This is like Halloween and out of the way, and then it's Christmas. Not long, is it? When this comes out, we're like nearly halfway through October. Well, a third of the way through. Isn't that great? There it is, Christmas. It's just sitting there waiting for us. It's a wonderful thing. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Do you know who told me that? Andy Williams. In a song. So, I do have a packed show for you. Let's just start it, shall we? Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do it. Oh, hang on. Do you want to do the interactive bit? Ready? Should we start the show? Okay. Let's start with this. Now, boys and girls, a while ago, I talked about Christmas in Yorkshire, here in the UK, and I'm doing the same again today because I found another tradition that I want to share with you. Now, the only problem is, it's not actually Christmas, this is actually New Year's, but it's close enough that I think it's worth talking about. And this is called Scrambling in Driffield, Yorkshire. Now, Driffield is a small town, and they've got this tradition that's been going on for hundreds of years on New Year's Day, when kids go from shop to shop or local businesses and establishments pretty much begging for treats. And it's believed that this has been going on for about 200 years. Now, the first ever edition of the Driffield Times, which is like their local newspaper, that came out on the 3rd of January 1860, and it mentioned that the scrambling had taken place a few days earlier. And also, in the 1950s, a lady who was 95 recalled scrambling when she was 5. So it goes back as far as the 1850s, at least. We're not sure how much further before the 1850s, but it's certainly been going a long, long time. Now, as the kids go door to door, they all sing a chant, and this is the chant they sing. Here it comes. Here we are at our toon end, a shoulder of mutton and a croon to spend. Are we downhearted? No. Will we win? Yes. Hip hip hooray. It's not a particularly catchy chant, but it's a chant, isn't it? So this catchy chant is believed to have been started by travelling traders that would set up shop on the outskirts of town, and they'd dish out free samples to promote their trade. And the bit about the shoulder of mutton is possibly about bartering. So you might go to the traders and barter a shoulder of mutton for whatever they were selling. And where it says a croon, well, that's just dialect for a crown, which was an old coin, an old English coin. We don't have crowns anymore, but it used to be an old English coin, which I believe was 5 shillings, I think. So, on New Year's Day, the kids would go round to all the shops shouting out their chant, and the shopkeepers would throw out fruit or sweets or nuts to the kids, and also pennies. And what some of them would do was they'd put the pennies on a shovel and heat them up. This is when a penny was actually worth quite a bit of money. Not quite, you know, not loads, but you'd be pretty happy to get a penny back in those days. They'd hold the shovel in the fire so all the pennies would get hot, and then they'd flick them out the window, and the kids would have to like wait till they'd cooled down before they could pick them up. Don't know why they were doing that. Maybe they hated children. But for the cost of a penny, it's worth it. Now, in 1961, the Driffield Times reported that over 100 children had taken part. And this is only a small town, don't forget. So 100 kids, that's not bad. But in 1974, New Year's Day became a bank holiday. So all the shops were closed on bank holidays. So they did move it to the 2nd. But the popularity really began to wane. And in 1995, no scrambling took place at all. None. You sort of wonder if there's like a few kids just wandering around shouting, "Oi, any sweets up there? I need some sweets. I've eaten all the stuff I got for Christmas already. It's been 5 days, 6 days. I've lost count. Give me some blooming sweets." So the Town Council Heritage Committee decided to bring it back, and they did. They released this leaflet that they dished out to everyone in town and all the shops and establishments to raise awareness of the tradition. And it raised the profile to a regional level and even a national level. And camera crews came round filming it, and it became a massive thing. Again, just in Driffield, though. So since 1996, it's been held on the 2nd of January because they moved it till the day after New Year's Day. But here's the thing, if New Year's Day is on a Friday, the shops would be open on a Saturday. But if New Year's Day is on a Saturday, then the bank holiday carries over to the following Monday. We get to save up that bank holiday. So you wouldn't, on the 2nd, the shops would be closed. The 3rd is the bank holiday again. So the 4th, they'd have to do it on the 4th. But in 2022, they did it on the 31st of December. They actually did it before New Year's. So, I don't know. I don't know what they do. Anyway, these days, it starts off at 9 o'clock, and they've got the mayor of the town and also the town crier. They all meet in the station yard like by the railway station, and the town crier rings his bell, and the kids all go running off around the streets, and they have a rolling street closure thing going on because the police are there as well, making sure everyone's safe. And yeah, it lasts about an hour and a half. So you've got from 9 o'clock in the morning till 10:30 to fill your pockets with a whole load of sweets. There you go. That is the tradition of scrambling in Driffield in Yorkshire. So if you're desperate for some sweets, get yourself there. 9 o'clock on the 2nd of January. Nice. Now we're going to do this.
Where are you, Christmas?
Where are you, Christmas? How about Bruges, Belgium? Yes, this is the place where Jack went on his honeymoon. So shouldn't that just qualify it already? Plus, it's the location of the 2008 In Bruges film, which, even though it is a dark hitman story, it is set in December, and you see Christmas lights strung over canals, trees glowing in the squares, and the medieval buildings wrapped in winter mist. Bruges maintains a charming, romantic atmosphere that reminds many visitors of Christmas come to life. With its gabled houses and cobblestone streets, Bruges is a pretty spectacular place to find Christmas cheer, and you can get a dose of it in the middle of summer too. Occupying a sought-after spot on the Vlemingstraat, right in the heart of the city, is De Witte Pelikaan, which is Belgium's first Christmas shop. It is known for staying festive all seasons and having elaborate window displays. The store is filled with the smell of pine and decorations from teddy bears to traditional Santas, plus ornaments, evergreens, and twinkling lights all year. There are also two other stores by Kath Wolfhart, which offer handcrafted Christmas decorations, glass ornaments, schwibbagen, and Christmas pyramids. The city is also famous for its chocolate, waffles, and sweet confections, so there are plenty of shops selling decadent delights. There is also a Choco Story Museum, where you can dive into chocolate lore, see chocolate made, and sample treats. You can also order hot chocolate, spiced baked goods, speculoos, and Yule log cakes at any time of the year. Bruges also has a winter glow experience, with light trails that transform the city into a festive wonderland. While the full setup is seasonal, there are now some permanent or semi-permanent art light installations with festive projections on its sculptures. Now, if you know of another real-life storybook with gingerbread facades and fairy lights, you narrate it for Jack. He'll recite it to me, and we'll tell you where to find Christmas throughout the year.
Well, there you go, boys and girls. As Bob said, I have been to Bruges and it's a lovely city. And yeah, I can imagine that it has got like a real Christmas aspect to it all year round. Yeah, maybe more at night time, like in the summer, it's probably not that Christmassy. But at night time, yeah, definitely. Good one, that one. If you've never been to Bruges, you know, you can go or don't go somewhere else. You, I don't care. Do what you want to do. But, you know, Christmas. Now let's do this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a
humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, in the last episode, I had Mary and Todd Pulte on, and we were discussing the BBC/FX 2019 version of A Christmas Carol that starred Guy Pearce. And that was the first half. This is the second half. Now, before I play this, I forgot to tell you this last episode. So, with my account with Zoom, you only get 40 minutes to chat, right? So, we did the first bit. That was fine. All recorded that. It's like, right, okay, now I'll send you another meeting. And we had to end the meeting, start a new one, right? Recorded that, okay? Then at the end of that, I was like, oh, shit. I didn't record it. Sorry. So, we had to record the whole bit again. The whole 40 minutes again. And that was pretty much from when Scrooge's dad turns up to about halfway through the bit we're talking about today. And I've got to say, Mary and Todd took it pretty damn well. They were cool about it. Like, oh no, never mind. We'll just do that bit again. 40 minutes they had to do again. They were cool about it. Just shows, doesn't it? That I'm an imbecile. I don't know what I'm doing. So, yeah, this is it, boys and girls. Now, as I've listened back to this when I've been editing it, I sort of feel like I do a lot of the talking and I feel a bit guilty about that. But I hope that the input that Todd and Mary give does add to it. And I want to apologise to them for doing all the chatting. It's just, you know, that's kind of, once again, it's me being an imbecile. Yeah. But here it is, boys and girls. This is the second part of that version of A Christmas Carol. Here it comes. Okay, boys and girls, now it's part two of our 2019 version of A Christmas Carol starring Guy Pearce as Scrooge. So far, we've got up to the point where the ghost of Christmas past has just left and the ghost of Christmas present has just turned up. It's just about to turn up because we've got Scrooge looking at himself in the mirror, practicing saying Merry Christmas. What do you think of his Merry Christmases?
Feeling behind it.
He's not doing a good job.
He's not there yet, is he? He's got a little way to go. Yeah.
There's a twinge there, but not quite the pins and needles. It's like a glimpse into he's starting to see a reason for things, but he's still stuck in the counting.
Yes. Then the Ghost of Christmas Present comes in, and, well, this ain't the Ghost of Christmas Present we're used to. And no. It's not his sister Fan. We established this. It's his sister Lottie, played by a different actress than the one that played her when he was a youngster. And I want to say she's married to Tom Hardy.
Oh, wow.
I'm feeling she's married to Tom Hardy. Might want to look that up. Are you looking it up?
Charlotte Riley.
Yeah. I can edit this bit out if she's not. But I think I'm sure, because Tom Hardy was involved in this. You know Tom Hardy, you're familiar with the actor.
Yeah.
He was involved in it, and he was meant to play a character in it. I don't know who he's going to play. I don't know if it's going to be Scrooge or who, but then scheduling conflicts came in the way, and he wasn't in it at all, but he was one of the producers. And the first place they go to is to the Cratchit's house, and Bob is there mending a pair of ice skates for his daughter Belinda, and Mary is writing and drawing a book of the story of Icarus for young Tim.
Writing it and drawing it from memory from her own youth.
That's right. And let's hope her memory has forgotten the end of the story, because Icarus hasn't got a particularly happy ending.
No.
No, yeah. And the whole idea is that this is meant to give Tim wings until it gets to the end of the book. Then the kids come in while they're there, and we see what they get for Christmas. And it's nice, actually, because it sort of seems like the sort of things you'd get for a Victorian Christmas. They get fruit, they get nuts, and they get biscuits. And, of course, the book and the ice skates. And the ghost points out that Scrooge is there watching this, and he doesn't count the amount of baubles on the Christmas tree, which is something he'd normally do. Like, his counting is one of his things that we've established. And this does suggest that he is actually starting to change and he's paying more attention to other things.
Look, you didn't count.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says that.
Exactly, yeah. Time passes, and they sit down for dinner. And we've got Belinda and Tim, and we discussed this before, that's the only two kids they've got, but we've also got Martha. Martha, do you want to explain who Martha is?
Martha is Mary's sister.
That's right, yes. She looks very much like her. Turns out she's a widow. And the one good thing about this is that she is played by an actress called... Do you want to look it up for us there, Mary?
Remy Milner?
That's it, Remy Milner. And we all know that Martha works as a milliner. So that's one good thing about this whole version of A Christmas Carol. Is that Martha, the actress that plays Martha, is a milliner. Yes. Yeah, or milliner, I think the proper word is. But milliner does mean milliner, it's short for. Then Mary goes to check on the pudding. And she's already discussed this with Bob. We didn't talk about this, but she talks about to Bob about how they're not going to talk about where they got the money for Tim's operation. This is established earlier on. They're not going to talk about it until after Christmas. But then Bob follows her out, and Mary decides that she does want to tell him that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And this point, just as she's about to tell him where the money came from, she can actually see Scrooge turning up. And I didn't like this. I really don't like it when Scrooge can interact with anything that's going on around him. They always make it clear that these are just shadows. But in this version, they're not just shadows. Mary can actually see him.
And he mentions that, and his sister says, in highly emotional states, sometimes...
You can be seen.
People can see spirits.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. I didn't like that, but you clearly didn't mind it.
Highly emotional state she's in.
Yeah.
And just the feeling of all the things that have happened, Scrooge is on her mind constantly because of what she went through. And she's thinking about the danger of him... And what it's going to do to her family when the truth comes out.
Well, this is it. So then she goes to tell him, but she doesn't tell him the actual truth of what happened, what we've just discussed. Instead, she tells him a story that she's made up about a lady that she used to do some cleaning for, who started to go senile, and she stole some of her diamonds, the diamonds to get the money to pay for the operation.
Asked for them, and the lady said yes. But she could have said, I could have been asking her about flowers.
Yeah. That's right, exactly. So it's not like she really stole them. She just actually asked for them and was given them because the lady was losing her marbles.
Do you think if she didn't see Scrooge, she would have told Bob the truth?
Well, no, I don't think that. But you do. You think because Scrooge was there, she changed her mind and couldn't do it.
I think because the feeling... just got too overwhelming for her that she it's still built in her that she's still fighting the feelings that she has about it.
She likes holding a lie.
She doesn't like it. It was overwhelming
her husband
to her.
Aye.
And she still loves her husband too much to cause him that additional pain.
Yeah, I didn't see that, but it's an interesting take on it. They go back inside and sit down, and Bob announces that he's been offered a new job. And I think it's suggested that he's offered a new job by one of the portly gentlemen or the men in the street that were collecting. Because,
the man that offered him the job did not like the way Scrooge spoke to him.
That's it, exactly, yeah.
So basically, he is offering him the job out of spite.
The best motivation.
And it's for more money.
It is for more money, you're right, as well. So Bob says he's going to hand in his resignation on Monday morning, which he says is the next day, which means that that Christmas Day is actually Sunday. And that's not right, but that would explain why Scrooge doesn't make a big deal about him wanting Christmas Day off, because he would have got it off anyway. That was the one day of the week people didn't work. But Christmas Day in 1943 was actually a Monday. So that means that Christmas Eve, when... in the book, everything takes place, would have been a Sunday, so Bob wouldn't have been at work then anyway. So this is actually does a better job of it, I suppose, on the days than actually in real life. So, well done to them for that, I guess. And then she says, we're not going to talk about it now. You're not doing that. We're not going to talk about it. And we're going to get Christmas done. And he's like, well, yeah, but hold on. And she's like, no, we're going to get Christmas done. And she's clearly getting very angry. She's pretty much spoiling the meal at this point. And then she's clearly aware of Scrooge's presence, and she starts shouting, get out of my house.
My favorite part of the movie.
Really?
Yes.
That's the worst part. What do you reckon everyone else on the table is thinking? She's looking dead in front of her. Like, she's almost like a slightly glazed expression. It's not like she's looking at anyone. I get that she feels him, but don't sit at the table shouting, "Get out of my house." What are the other four thinking? Who's she talking to? You, Martha? Is it you, Tim? Tim, get out. You heard your mum.
The pain that she's in, though.
But just deal with it differently, man. Maybe just sort of look at the ground and don't say anything, or look into a corner and say, "Get out of my house." At least then they think she's not going to stand to hear it.
For 7 years.
Yeah.
I understand this.
For 7 years.
But imagine
how. Blow up.
Well, at this point, the Ghost of Christmas Present does take Scrooge out. But imagine the atmosphere after they've gone.
Oh, yeah.
They'll be sitting there like, "Well, Mum's loopy.
Before
another Christmas ruined."
Before the sister takes him out, he says, "Tell her I'm not going to say anything to Bob."
Yeah, he does. But but they can't interact with her anyway. Well, at least she wouldn't hear them. Yeah. Okay, well, he's ruined their dinner. And then they go to a church in Wales. And everyone's singing at this memorial service for those who died in the collapsed mine all those years ago, the bit we saw in The Ghost of Christmas Past. And there's one guy, I think he's not singing.
Well, that's the one that opened the movie in the graveyard.
Exactly, right? Now, hold on, have a listen to this. You spent a lot of time defending this pile of crap. Well, listen to what I have to say. The Ghost of Christmas Present says he takes a train to London every Christmas Eve. Every Christmas Eve. What does he do when he goes to London? He wheezes on Marley's grave. Every Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
When did Marley die?
That's
the year
true.
Before. He died the year before. Which means he's been one. Right. One time. Every Christmas Eve. Once. It's not every Christmas Eve. That's one time. And when we say one time, it was yesterday. Because that's the only time he would have had a chance to do it.
Oh, it gets me, though. I'm not thoroughly convinced that it was just 1 year.
Look at the gravestone.
Opens up. Yeah, I'd have to look at the gravestone. I don't recall seeing.
I looked at the gravestone. It says the 23rd of December, 1842. And then it says on the screen, 23rd of December, 1843. I've double checked it, Todd.
Okay,
this whole film is a fiasco. It's a house of cards that has collapsed.
No, just what I just said. Just the one scene where they got the years wrong.
It really bugged me, that did. It really bugged me. She had to say he'd done it every year. He did it once, and that was yesterday. She should have just said, "You know what he did yesterday? Went and peed on Marley's grave." But she didn't say that. Every year, he catches a train to London. 1 year! Right. Okay. Oh, and then, actually, at this point, he actually does say, "Given my time again, I would not save money on timber. I would not be myself." And that is during The Ghost of Christmas Present. And when I first saw this at the end of the film, I remember thinking, it was only like the very end where he changed. But no, he does start to change a little bit more. There's a couple of things we mentioned before as well. So he is actually changing, and he does say this. And then he sits outside of the church, and there's a big monument to the horses, isn't there, which he's looking at.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he thanks Lottie, but he says it's too late. It's too late for him to be redeemed, which I thought was quite interesting as well, actually.
Did you see, in that monument was paid for by Scrooge for the
horse? Is that right?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Another thing where he puts animals ahead of humans.
Yeah. Yeah, which we've discussed, yeah. And then we get the Ghost of Christmas Future, and the church is all ruined. Sorry, say again?
This Ghost of Christmas Future is one of my favorite Ghosts of Christmas Future.
Really?
Yes, because he, like I said, it's a ghost story. Ghost stories are, this guy brings the scary.
Yeah.
Well, he's got his mouth sewn shut, hasn't he? And Scrooge says, "No one knows what the future is." So that's why his mouth. Do you know the chap? Are you familiar with the guy that played the Ghost of Christmas Future? The actor's called Jason Fleming. He was in a British film called Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, directed by Guy Ritchie. That was Guy Ritchie's first big film. I can't really name many other films he's been in, though. I know he was in the remake of Clash of the Titans, and he's been in a lot of other things. But yeah, that's who he is. I didn't love it, actually, because it was so... Mind you, having said that, all three ghosts are nothing like they are in the book at all. None of them are. Like, bearing in mind The Ghost of Christmas Present is his sister. How did you? We didn't discuss this. How did you feel about the fact that The Ghost of Christmas Present was nothing like the one in the book? Who is my favourite of the three, as I'm sure he is for most people?
Oh, the big jolly man?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like Santa, yeah.
This version is, it goes more into the like, as I've been saying, it's more of a ghost story, a scary story. And if you had the more standard Ghost of Christmas Present, but it would be more jarring and more out of character to the way this film was created.
But I think her being the Ghost of Christmas Present helped him change.
Yeah.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah. That does make sense. And also what you said makes sense as well, Todd. I hate to admit it. This is like I'm Scrooge and my opinions of this film are changing. I'm not happy about it. I'm not happy about it at all. But the more I talk to you about it, I shouldn't have done the show. You should have just let me do this on my own and I could have ripped this thing apart. It deserves.
And I would have never listened to your podcast again.
No one listens anyway. I don't know if she was the best choice, because surely she should have been the Ghost of Christmas Past, if anything, because she's dead. But I see, you're right, if they'd had a jolly character in this film, it would have been, it wouldn't have made sense, because this isn't a jolly film. There ain't much jolliness in it. Even in The Redemption, there ain't much jolliness.
No.
Okay, sorry. So where we are now is, it's the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, and he's still at the church in Wales, but the church is all collapsed and fallen down.
Right.
And they go to his place of work, or we see his place of work, and Cratchit is there, and he's written out his resignation. So here's another question then. When is this?
Yeah. Well, it's Monday. He's going to turn his resignation in the Monday.
He was going to turn his resignation.
That's what he says.
Is this the next day? We don't know.
But he goes to the house.
Yeah. And it's like, it is the future. The future is not...
The day after. That's not the Christmas future then, is it? That's not Christmas yet to come. That's still this Christmas. Especially because in the book, when he's got the Ghost of Christmas Present, that's actually like 12 days. They cover the whole of Christmas, not just Christmas Day. They go, there's no versions that really cover it like this. But in the book, when he parts from the Ghost of Christmas Present, they've just been to a 12th night party, which is 12 days after Christmas. So this is, it's meant to be Boxing Day, but it doesn't really add up with what happens later on. I don't know what's going on.
This part doesn't add up.
But also the other thing you can look at is, this is a Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. You don't know when any of it is going to be. You don't know for sure when anything is going to be, because...
But doesn't the daughter run in when he puts the resignation on the desk and saying something happened to Tim?
Yeah, but we still don't know what year that is.
Yeah, well, Tim's the same height, although he's not likely to grow anyway.
Person.
He's
got some strange form of dwarfism, hasn't he, that I should have mentioned earlier.
Yeah, it could be 1 year, it could be 2 years, you don't know, and they don't...
Yeah, but then, okay, right, we'll get back to that, because what happens a bit later on. So he's in the office, like Mary just said, Belinda comes running in and says, Dad, quick, we've got to go, Tim's in trouble or something. They've gone, Scrooge is looking at his ceiling and it's all ice, and the ice cracks and Tim falls down through the ice.
This to me was like one of the greatest
effects. And was that really Tim, or was that just a doll? That's what I was asking.
Like, was it that character?
Was it the character?
Did that actor actually do that? Was it a doll?
I thought it probably was the actor.
You think it was?
I would have thought. I don't know.
Yeah, the whole effect of that was so jarring. Like, you can feel the horror of it, the pain of it, and you can see it on Scrooge's face that this is affecting him. It's just...
I thought it was a cool special effect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't dislike it.
Well, that's good.
Is there something? Yes, gives it something. And then it cuts to, they're by the ice pond, and Tim actually turns up, doesn't he? When Scrooge is there watching what's going on at the pond.
Yeah, that's at the Cratchit's house?
No, I thought it was at the pond, and that isn't Tim between life and death?
It was.
Yeah, he is between life and death.
But that is back at that same
at the pond.
Outside of Cratchit's house, the same place where Mary was going to talk, where Mary was talking to Bob about where the money came.
Oh, in their backyard?
Yeah. In their backyard.
Yeah. Oh, was it? Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's standing there.
Yeah.
Because he's in bed dying.
He's in the bed dying.
You're right. So of course you are. Yeah, you're right.
So
yeah,
I think it was Tim's spirit coming to talk to Scrooge.
Yeah. You saw it. You are right. Yeah, that's where it is. Yeah, and that is where Tim dies. He's dead.
Yeah.
And then Scrooge is back in his house. And this is interesting because this is almost like they were making a dig at the book, because in the book, Scrooge is there laying out dead, and he just can't reach over and pull out the cloth to see who's laying on the bed. He just can't do it. But in this one, he pulls back the cloth and goes, yep, I'm dead. And he doesn't seem too bothered. He seems resigned to it and doesn't care.
At this point, I took that as he realizes at this point that he's getting what he deserves.
Yeah. Well, he does sort of say about that later as well, I think. Because we cut to the graveyard,
and then the same kid comes
to take the train.
Every year. Looks like he's been doing it a few years now, because the date on Scrooge's gravestone is 1851, and the miner is there. And this time, he's not peeing on Marley's grave; he's actually peeing on Scrooge's grave.
Right.
And we see the Cratchits over at Tim's grave mourning his death, and there's very little emotion I sort of felt about this bit. Scrooge doesn't seem like, you know, like in the book where he's like, I can't look at this, I'll change, I'll be begging and pleading. In this one, he's got very little emotion. And he's even asking why the spirit's bothered to come. It's like he's got, you know, he just says that I'm beyond redemption.
Yeah. Well, and that's in keeping with this version of it, the whole feeling of this version, it leads to this Scrooge, kind of an ending. Because would this character that has been built up this way be on his knees begging for himself at this point? This character, the way they've built him, he would not be begging for himself, because he counts everything by what it values.
And
he realizes that he is of no value.
Well, yeah, pretty much, I guess. Then Marley turns up for one last attempt to try and get him to change. And Scrooge, well, like you say, he actually refuses the redemption.
Yeah.
And he actually says he's getting what he deserves. He accepts it. And he's pretty much admitted that he's an arsehole. That's what I've written that. He's admitting he's an arsehole.
Yeah.
But then, at this point, all the other ghosts are sort of turned up in the graveyard. They're sort of looking at him, watching from behind gravestones or behind trees and that. They're watching what's going on. And then the final thing he says is, the only change I would do is to spare the life of Tim.
Yeah.
Yes.
And as soon as he says this, all the ghosts disappear.
And if you look at the face of all the ghosts, though, they're realizing that he has finally put someone else ahead of himself.
Of course.
Then Marley putting the coins back on his eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ghosts disappear. Marley's back in his grave. And he's resting in peace, which is all he wanted. Yeah. This is the thing. When I first watched it, now we've talked about it, I won't lie to you, I have changed my opinion a bit. I still hate it, but you have changed the way I look at it a bit. And the bit about, because I just thought, hang on a minute, that's not redemption, just because he wants Tim to survive. But you're right, I guess you summed it up, Todd. He's put someone else before him.
Yeah.
And I guess that is why he's changed. I didn't pick that up before, so I guess you've sort of opened my eyes to that one. Well done. I'm not happy. Then, suddenly, Scrooge is back in the present. His grave's disappeared. He looks across. Tim's grave's disappeared. And he starts running through the streets. And
falls on his ass.
He does. He slips on the icy street and lands right on his back and his backside. And there's an old lady there who's got a bag of grit that she's gonna scatter around onto the streets. And again, like we mentioned before, he says this is a gift that's given without any debt implied. And I like that. I thought that was good. But then what I didn't like was that he steals the bag of grit.
Yeah.
The first thing he does after he's been redeemed is fall on his backside. The second thing he does is grabs a bag of grit from an old lady and runs off down the street with it.
And he's wishing everybody a Merry Christmas.
But he did he did apologize as he did it.
He did say sorry, yeah. And then other people are shouting Merry Christmas at him. Yeah. I thought, the first time I watched it, I thought it was the old lady that said Merry Christmas. But I watched it a second time. She didn't say nothing. She just stood there.
Yeah, because he stole
it. Just nicked my bag of grit.
But the reason why he stole that.
Well, yes, this is it. This is the reason why. Yeah. Is he runs to the ice pond where Tiny Tim had drowned in the future, and he scatters the grit on the pond so that no one can skate on there. And again, I couldn't understand. I know you sort of, it's in the future, it's all a bit up in the air what it was, but what day is it that they go skating?
We don't know.
None of it made, it didn't make sense to me, that bit. I think they could have written it a little bit different just to try and make it a bit clearer, to get the times right there. We're getting right near the end now. Scrooge turns up after he's scattered the grit on the pond so that no one can ice skate and Tim won't fall through the ice. He turns up at the Cratchits and he's got three things he wants to tell them. And the first thing he says is, I know you wanted to leave, Bob, and I give you my blessing to leave. And I'm closing the business and I'm also going to give you £500. The second thing he tells them, which he probably would have been best keeping to himself, is I've been visited by some spirits.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't let them know that. I wouldn't let them know. And the third thing he says is, you can't go skating, Tim. You can't go skating.
Yeah.
But all this time, Mary's telling him, get out. Get out.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, she's not happy about him being there at all. Cratchit's not too keen having him there. But the whole time, Mary is definitely saying, get out.
How did you know I was quitting? How did you know I was leaving?
Yeah. It's like, if you were yourself in that situation and you just experienced something like that, would you be rational?
No.
No, I suppose not. I guess not. Yeah. Yeah. And he shakes Bob's hand, which is an interesting bit, the way they do it. He sort of puts his hand out. He's got his hand out, but it's not to shake Bob's hand. But then he looks at his hand and then he puts it out further for Bob to shake it. And they shake hands. And then Mary shows him out and she says to him as he's leaving, we'll take your money, but I will not forgive you.
Right.
And again, he says, I won't ask to be forgiven. Yeah. I don't deserve forgiven.
He doesn't deserve it.
I'll endeavor, how does he put it? I'll endeavor to live
the best that I can be.
Yeah.
That's what he says. Forward. Yeah. And at this point, I want to say, I've got a lot of bits of A Christmas Carol that are my favourite bits, but I always love a big redemption scene at the end. I don't like it when they brush over it. I like to see a massive redemption scene, you know, like with, I like to see him go to the Cratchits. Well, you don't see him go to the Cratchits in a lot of versions, but I like to see him go to see his nephew. I like to see him see the portly gentleman in the street. I love all that. And this bit, it's very short, the redemption is, and he ain't that jovial either. It doesn't seem quite the arsehole he was, but it doesn't seem like really happy and joyful, and there's no colour still. It's still very grey, everything.
But what does Mary say at the end? What's her closing line?
He thanks her.
Yeah.
He thanks her for the mirror and the light and the view into his own soul. So
does he say that? He says the mirror's been held up. Does he thank her for that?
Yes, he thanks her for it.
Oh, he does. And then the very end, the very last ridiculous bit, is Mary actually looks at the camera.
Yeah, she breaks it through off.
There is still much work to be done.
Yeah, she thanks the spirits and then says there's still work to be done.
Yeah. What's that all about then?
She's a witch.
Yeah. Well, I think I sort of agree with you there. I think I do. Well, I don't like it still.
Sorry.
But you have changed my opinion on it a lot, actually. Yeah, it would have been much better if I just sat here and ripped it all apart, saying all the awful things about it that I think. But having spoken to you, I feel different now. I'm not the man I was. I'm not the man I was.
You're not Scrooge. Good.
I'm not going to watch it again, though. I'm done now. Definitely done. Definitely done. I would have been done after the first time, but then I knew I'd have to do it at some point for the podcast. And I'm glad I have finally got around to doing it, because it would have been one of those that I just keep putting on the back burner. But because you didn't know this, Mary emailed me saying that I mentioned it in a previous episode not long ago, actually, when I did the Yule log, wasn't it? That was the one of the fire that we talked about with the Ghost of Christmas Past. And you emailed me saying it's one of your favourite versions and you offered to come on. And I'm glad you did. And I think you have changed my opinion of it a lot. there's a lot of things that are wrong with it, in my opinion. But my problem I have with every version is if they veer away from the book, then I don't like it. I want it to be, or I'm still waiting for the perfect adaptation. I don't think it's ever going to come. I would love it if one day every single beat, every single word of the book was taken into account in a version. Because even the Alistair Sim version, they've changed bits, but they've also added quite a lot. The Muppets one, there's a lot in it that's still really good, but then there's still bits they've had to miss out. It's not a particularly long version. It's not the shortest one. George C. Scott version, that's quite close as well. But when I covered that, I realised just how much they'd missed out as well, or changed. This one is, as adaptations go that are set in Victorian times, is very, very, very different.
Yes.
But you guys clearly love it. Do you want to tell us a bit more about what it is you do like about it? I know you said you like the darkness, and because it's a ghost story, you like that. But is there any other bits of it that you particularly like? Because just one thing I just want to say before I let you. I think the Scrooge in this is the nastiest Scrooge.
Yes.
In any version. And maybe that's why we don't see him as a jovial character at the end, because the things he does and the things that have happened to him. The Scrooge in most versions is just a miser and he's tight, but in this one he's just a very evil person. A lot of his business dealings are very, very evil in the fact that they don't care about the humanity and the people that they're treading on or that have died, that are mentioned when every single link in the chain is a death of a person. It's never implied that it's Scrooge's fault that anyone's died in the book or in any other versions, but in this one they talk about all the deaths that he's created. So he's a very, very nasty Scrooge compared to all the others. So tell the listeners why you think that they should watch it and why you think it's such a good version.
I don't know. I enjoy it because of the, like I said, the darkness of it.
I like new takes on Christmas things. Carol. I watch and read different things about The Christmas Carol. I've watched some that are just a paper cutout where people are just cartoons of it. Just any version of this, I love. But this one, I've always, you know, felt that a ghost story should be scary.
Yeah.
And some of them do start out scary, and then they switch to camp. They just get really silly. This one held the format from start to finish as an eerie, dark ghost story. And that just, it drew me in from the start. And like I said, the first time I watched it, I was like, that's different.
Me too. Yeah.
That's different.
Yeah.
But I liked it enough to watch it again. And I think the first year it was out, I think I watched it 5 times.
Not me, just once.
You watched it 15 hours of your life, seriously, the first time it came out, back in 2019?
Yes.
And you watched it once, Mary?
No, I don't think, I've watched it every year since it's been out. I think
but
I
the first year you watched it once?
Yeah.
Well, the first year was like a miniseries, only for an hour in effect.
Oh, it came out in three. Oh, so when it came out in the States as well, it was three consecutive nights, is that right?
Yeah, and I think it was the next year that it was available like as one thing and you could watch it. And I put it on my DVR, and I would just rewatch.
But then it wasn't, we couldn't find it for a while.
Yeah.
And then it became on Hulu.
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah, so I watched it on YouTube. That's where it is now. There's adverts about every 8 minutes, which could have been worse. But then when you're watching it for 3 hours, the adverts keep popping up. But
watching it where there's no commercials, although you can see the breaks where commercials would be, it flows through a lot easier.
And there were two versions, you said, right?
Yes, there were two versions. There was a version...
Family-friendly.
More family-friendly.
Was it?
That didn't have the cursing, and they didn't have the nudity.
Fanny, yeah.
They didn't see her bum. And that was the first one I saw. And second one I saw that I recorded on my DVR was the...
adult
version. More adult version.
All right. So, I wasn't aware there was two versions. That's funny.
It might have been in the U.S. because it was going to be on regular TV.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Right.
But,
well, there we go, boys and girls. Well, you ruined it for me, to be honest.
Sorry.
Because, you know, I hated it, and now I don't hate it as much as I did. That's pretty much as far as I can go, though. There's a few things that I just... Well, I think it goes back to what I said earlier, that and as soon as you start veering away from the book, I get disappointed. But you're right, it is a ghost story. It is dark. It's definitely dark. It doesn't leave you feeling happy at the end, though. It would be nice if you felt a bit happier. Maybe they've just done it just a little bit. Maybe if Mary had been a little bit more forgiving. I don't know. I don't know what I needed. But anyway, if you want to check it out, boys and girls, it's there on YouTube. I'm sure you can find it in other streaming services. Thank you so much for coming on, Mary and Todd. And you've done a blinding job in changing my take on it. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Anything you want to say to the listeners?
If you have a chance to watch it, if you haven't yet, just know that it is dark and
long
and
long. Yeah,
you need
long.
To turn the volume up to hear the dialogue at some times. There were many of the complaints about it were because it was dark. But that was what I liked about it.
On my phone, I was watching it on my phone and I had the brightness up full. And as soon as I did that on my phone, I could see everything clearly. And it actually looked a lot better. But when I was originally trying to watch it with the wife on TV all those years ago, it was very dark. You're right. Yeah. It's hard to see what's going on a lot of the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's on its own. If it was the first time you'd ever seen any Christmas Carol,
they wouldn't like it, I don't think. You'd be like, Jack.
I don't know.
Well, I think you'd have a shot, wouldn't you? You've never read the book and you just watched that first. Yeah. And then you start watching the Muppets version. But hang on a minute.
Yeah. It would be fun to go the other way just to see.
Yeah. That's a good point. Well, thanks again so much for coming on, guys. I really do appreciate it. Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas
and thank you.
Yeah. I just want to say a huge thank you again to Mary and Todd. Here's the thing, I really hated that version of A Christmas Carol. But now, after talking to them about it and how much they love it, it's actually making me see it in a different light. And I still hate it. Maybe I don't hate it anymore. I don't think I'll ever watch it again. I think I respect it now. Whereas before I hated it. But now I just respect it. In a way. It is what it is. I think that's the thing. My problem is I'm a real purist, and I say this all the time, how much of a purist I am. And with this version, they changed the story almost completely. And because of that, I can't enjoy it. But it's really well made. It is an interesting version. And if you haven't watched it, you probably should check it out. Thank you one more time to Todd and Mary. And good news, boys and girls, they're going to be in the next couple of episodes, because when we were chatting, we recorded the quiz, so they'll be doing that next episode. And they also both told us how they found out about Santa, so we'll be talking about that as well. But now, boys and girls, it's this. Well, boys and girls, we haven't had a joke in a long time, have we? So I thought, you know what? Let's have a joke. And this one is not that good. Just like all the previous ones, though. Okay, are you ready? Here it comes. What is red, white, and blue at Christmas? A sad candy cane. Do you need me to explain it? Probably. I'm not gonna. That's your joke, kids. Can we just forget it ever happened?
Do you hear what I hear?
You know, we have a mystery at the Tiki Bar. I've asked everyone, and no one seems to know. Who the heck is this moderation that everyone keeps telling me to drink with? So it was just after midnight when she walked in. The kind of hour where the city's heartbeat slows to a nervous flutter, and the rain gets personal. Venetian blinds carving the light into crooked stripes across a desk stacked with unpaid bills and cold coffee. I was thinking about calling it a night when the door creaked open. I just poured my last shot of rye. She stood there, hair damp, hat pulled low, shadow long and lean across the floor. They say trouble walks in wearing perfume and bad intentions. This dame had both. The kind of woman whiskey helps you forget. She had a fog of mystery and a question that didn't make sense. Not at first. I'm Pulte. Mary, she said. She stepped closer, water beading on her coat. Up close, her eyes were storm gray and searching. They didn't blink much. "I'm looking for answers," she said, "about something called golden syrup." I almost laughed. Almost. "Golden syrup? Lady, most folks come here chasing definitions, lost words, stolen phrases. But you want me to tail a breakfast spread?" Her mouth curled faintly at the corner. Not a smile, more like an admission. "It's not about breakfast. It's about syrup." I reached for my fags. "Don't ask. That's another Do You Hear What I Hear segment. Start talking." She hesitated, eyes tracing the lines of smoke as if they might draw her courage. "I was watching an episode of the Great British Baking Show, and they mentioned using golden syrup in their recipe. I want to know, is it the same as what we call maple syrup in the U.S.? She said she started asking questions, and people told her not to. "Golden syrup," I said, blowing a thin gray ribbon toward the ceiling. "Heard of it. Been around since the 1880s, when Queen Victoria was in petticoats. Thick cane sugar, boiled down into light treacle. Brits poured on their porridge, made by Lyle's. Tin can, green and gold, a dead lion on the label, with bees buzzing around. The label's a riddle, straight from the Book of Judges. Samson and the lion, Samson's riddle. Out of the strong came forth sweetness. A dead lion, bees nesting inside. Means power hides sugar in its belly sometimes. Or danger, depending on how you read it. Creepy poetry for a dessert." Her brow furrowed. "So, it's just sugar?" I leaned forward, elbows on my desk. "Not just sugar. Golden syrup is an amber-colored, thick and sweet, inverted sugar syrup made from the refining of sugar cane or beet juice. It has a unique, buttery, caramel-like flavor and is a classic baking staple in Britain. But it is used for flapjacks, so I can understand the confusion." She stood straighter, her chin lifted. "I didn't come here for hype. I came for the truth." She bit her lip, thinking. "Then it's not?" Something about the way she said it, steel under velvet, made me decide I had to spill it, like smashing a bottle on the pavement. Sharp edges everywhere, and someone's bound to bleed. "There's no real substitute for golden syrup. There was a time when a can of golden syrup was hard to come by in the States. So recipes were adapted to use corn syrup or honey in its place. I mean, it looks like honey, and it's thick like a corn syrup, but it tastes like neither. Golden syrup is more rich and satisfying." She nodded once. "Now I know what I came for." She slipped out the door before I could say goodbye. On my desk sat the tin of golden syrup, green and gold. The lion, still dead. The bees, still busy. I poured myself a drink and studied the label. Out of the strong came forth sweetness. Cute riddle, but in my world, sweetness always costs, and someone always pays. Cheers and happy Christmas.
What the f*** was that? You know, I did get an email from Mary Pulte asking me what golden syrup is because she heard about it on the Great British Bake Off, and I forwarded it to Bob and he did that. Wow. Bob's got his own podcast. It's called Festive Foreign Film Fans, and don't worry, he doesn't do stuff like that on it. Wow. Wow. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Well, boys and girls, it's everyone's favourite part of the show. It's the quiz. Now, I have 16 people that sent in their scores. And I think the week before, episode before, it was only 15. So if we can like keep it going up by one every episode, well, in a number of years, we'll get it up to like, you know, I don't know, a load more. I can't do the maths, but you know. So anyway, why not send in your score? If you've never done it before, this could be your week, man. This could be it, where you get off your arse and send me a blooming score. Anyway, these people have, and this is what we've got. With four, we have Mark Westcott. Are you proud of yourself, Mark? Because you shouldn't be. That's the lowest out of anyone. But we've got a lot of people with 6 points. And that is John Gomez, Jack Unverfirth, Frank Talley, David Ferguson, Barbara Wright, Pamela Wootton, Mary Pulte, and Jennifer Kay. I've just got to say about Barbara Wright, last episode she only scored 3, so she's doubled her score. Well done, Barbara Wright. Keep this going, and next episode you'll score 12 out of 10. That's incredible. With 6/7 points is Benji Pearson. Where'd you get off giving yourself an extra possible point or not? I'm giving you 6, Benji. Deal with it. With 7 points, we've got Martin Goodman and Adam Parker from the Merry Britsmas podcast. If you're not listening to Adam's podcast, why aren't you listening to Adam's podcast? It's really good. Yeah, I just did the latest episode just come out. Another blinder. With 8 points, we've got Joseph Schmidt, Ed Daly and Mike Westphal from the Advent Calendar House. And don't you know it, Ed Daly got that boogie woogie Santa Claus question correct. So well done, Ed Daly. Yeah. And with 9 points, I don't believe her, to be honest. I think she's making it up. With 9 points, Nicola McLean. So congratulations for lying about your score, Nicola McLean. Okay, well, thanks for sending those scores in, boys and girls. This episode's quiz, it's mainly the first 6 questions are all about Christmas books. And then the next ones are just general knowledge. Are you ready? I'll take that as a yes. Here comes question number... Oh, it's an easy one. Easy one. We're starting off with an easy one. What is the name of Scrooge's clerk or Clark? But his name's not Clark. But what is his name? And it's not Clark. Question number 2. Who wrote The Gift of the Magi? Who wrote it? Easy, isn't it? If you know the answer. Question number 3. Which book was the inspiration for the classic Christmas movie It's a Wonderful Life? Now, in the answers, it has got the author's name. But I'm not too bothered about that. If you can give me the name of the book, I'll be happier with that. Next one. True or false? Is this true or is this a pile of lies? Agatha Christie wrote The Adventure of the Christmas Pudding. Did she or did she not? Next one. Oh, right. Okay, this might be a bit tricky if you don't know the answer. Just like all the questions. So don't get upset. What is the name of the Discworld's equivalent of Father Christmas? Now, if you're not familiar with the Discworld books, good luck getting this one correct. The Discworld books is a really successful series of fantasy comedy books written by Terry Pratchett. They're fantastic books. They've made a couple of films of them. I think they've done like 3 or 4 live action ones. And then they had a TV series that weren't that good. But anyway, I have mentioned this in a previous episode. So that should be enough for you. Because I know that you listen to every episode intently and make notes. So just flick through your notes from previous episodes and it'll pop up, possibly. Okay, next one. Fill in the blank. Complete the John Updike title, The 12 Blank of Christmas. The 12 Blanks of Christmas, but there's only one blank. What's that blank? It ends in S. I've given you that. That's one of the letters. You're nearly there, aren't you? Just get the rest of the letters. Job's a good one. Okay, now we're on to our general knowledge ones. Easy one, he said. In the Bible, who was king when Jesus was born? Not a particularly nice man, actually. He had a habit of killing children. Next one. In Home Alone, where is Kevin's family going to spend Christmas? Where are they going? Where are they off to? He didn't make it because he was home alone. Yeah. See, it all makes sense now, doesn't it? It becomes clear. Yeah, but where did this family end up going? Now, that's the first one. Yeah, the first one. And the next one. Oh, hang on. This is number 9 already. Okay. In Elf, who is Buddy's real father? Now, I got the actor's name. That's the easy bit. But what's the character's name? And I didn't get that. But I didn't even think about it. And I looked at the answers and I was like, oh, his dad. They meant his dad's name. And I got the actor. I don't know what I was thinking. And the last one. Where would you find Christmas Island? Where would you find it? Imagine you're playing hide and seek with Christmas Island, right? Where's he hiding? Is he in a cupboard? Is he under the bed? Is he in an ocean? He's probably in an ocean. Which ocean is he in? Simple as that. Which ocean? Do you want to give you some options? Okay, I'll do it. Atlantic Ocean, Indian Ocean, North Sea, that's not an ocean, or the Pacific Ocean. Those are the four options. Which one are you going for? Have a think about it and make sure you get it right. Okay, well, those are your 10 questions. Are you ready for your 10 answers? Yeah, of course you are. You don't need to prepare yourself for something like that. It's just words coming out of my mouth. Okay, what is the name of Scrooge's clerk? It's Clark. It's not Clark, it's Bob Cratchit. We all know that, don't we? Easy one. We start you off with an easy one. Next one, quite easy as well. Who wrote The Gift of the Magi? Well, that was O. Henry. O. Henry. Oh, you silly sod writing books about gifts. Have you ever read that? I have, actually. Read it a couple of times. It's all right. I prefer the Mickey Mouse version. It's easier just to watch that and read a book. Okay, next one. Well, this is a bit tricky, but you know what? I got this. Which book was the inspiration for the classic Christmas movie It's a Wonderful Life? Well, the book is called The Greatest Gift, and it's by Philip Van Doren Stern. Now, I got the greatest gift bit. That's what I said. I only wanted the title, and the only reason I only wanted the title was because that was all I knew. So, yeah, The Greatest Gift. And I remembered it, and I said, oh, something about a gift. The gift? No, The Greatest Gift. I'm very proud of myself because I didn't get all of them this week. Okay, true or false? Agatha Christie wrote The Adventure of the Christmas Pudding. Well, I said false, and do you know what? She did. She wrote it. She sat there and she wrote the blooming thing. Do you know why? Just to spite me, so that 100 years later, I'd get it wrong in a quiz. Well, I did. Next one. What is the name of the Discworld's equivalent of Father Christmas? Well, surely it's the Hogfather. And do you know what he does? He's a pig that flies around on a sleigh that's driven by, I don't know, a team of hippopotamuses, but I don't know how many he's got. And he gives pork products to all the good boys and girls. Not joking. I'm not joking. Okay, next one. Fill in the blank. Complete the Updike title, The 12 Watts of Christmas. Well, the blank was terrors. The 12 terrors of Christmas. I didn't have a clue. I just thought, maybe it is the 12 days of Christmas. Yeah, let's go with that. Shouldn't have. Made a fool of myself. Okay, now we're down to the general knowledge ones. In the Bible, who was king when Jesus was born? Well, that was King Herod. Next one. In Home Alone, where is Kevin's family going to spend Christmas? They're off to Gay Paris. Yeah. Paris, Texas. Oh, and it's not in Texas. It's in Paris, in France. Paris, France. Why did I say Paris, Texas? I don't know. Just trying to mix things up. Just enjoy yourself. It's Christmas after all. Okay, next one. In Elf, who is Buddy's real father? I said James Caan. The book said Walter Hobbs. Yeah. So, yeah, I got that one wrong. And the last one. Where would you find Christmas Island? And the answer is wherever you left it, or the Indian Ocean, which was B. And do you know what I said? I said the Pacific Ocean. Yeah, I'm not proud of myself. Quite ashamed. Do you know, I thought I got 7, but I've just had another look through. I got blooming 6, didn't I? What a lot of bollocks. I can't believe that. Do you know, I'll tell you whose fault that is. Bloody Agatha Christie, isn't it? Writing books about the adventure of the Christmas pudding. What she thinks she's doing. Yeah, I scored 6. That puts me on par with all the blooming dinloids from last episode. I hope you did a lot worse than me. Goodness me. At Christmas as well. Well, boys and girls, you know what to do. All you got to do is drop me an email with a number for the subject, and that's it. Just tell me what you scored. You could do what Nicola McLean did and completely lie about your score. Or you could be honest. I don't know. Do what you want to do. It's your life, isn't it? But make sure you send me that number. The email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com. Nicola, if you did score 9 last episode, I'm sorry for calling you a liar. I just don't believe you. So there you go. Right, now we're doing this. And that is it for this episode. I'm sorry to say I don't have a recommendation. I've just been listening to the Sherlock Holmes audiobooks still, and I'm really enjoying them, I might say. So I want to say a big thank you, of course, again to Mary and Todd for being on the show, and also to Bob Baker for his fantastic segments. Now make sure you send me your scores from the quiz. I need them. I need them. This could be the week. Maybe you've never done it before, and this week you suddenly think, do you know what? I'm going to do it. And then you do it, and then you feel great about yourself. Although, if the school's really bad, you won't feel great about yourself. But at least you've achieved something by sending me a number in an email. The email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com, or you can go on the website totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time, but in the meantime, you know I love ya. Merry, happy Christmas!
Excuse me!
Excuse you for what?
I burped.